Hi, how are you? What you doing? Anything? You doing anything? Got a few minutes for me? We can spend some time together. I don't want to cuddle or anything like that. I just want to spend some valuable time with you. I just want to take an hour of your life and invigorate it and make you think. Here we go.
Ron Van Dam is an experienced talk show host. Do not attempt to try this at home.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Do you? Well, do you? Do you?
Whatever.
All right. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's up to you. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. I know, you know what it is.
Sit back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you, Julie. Thank you very much. Welcome to the program. I am Ron Van Dam. I'll admit it to you. You don't need to know my Social Security number. That's not important unless I want to change something on one of my accounts. Oh, speaking of that, oh my God. I bought something online yesterday from a company that I had never bought anything online from before. Oh my God, what I went through. I tried to make a purchase online and it rejected my card. That is an immediate insult. That's like someone slapping you in the face. Excuse me? Excuse me? You're not taking my card? Excuse me? Who do you think you are? My credit is impeccable, sir. So I called my credit card company, and I said, can you believe this? Can you believe this credit card company? I was denied. I was denied. No, you are denied. You cannot come here. I was denied by the internet. Oh. I've been denied by better places, by the way. Believe me. Oh, a lot. And worse places as well. So the credit card representatives are so incredibly polite. They and what is your name, Ron? Can I call you Ron? Yeah, that's my name. Okay. How can we help? Can I do anything? Can I lick your feet for you? Thank you for being a member for 20 years. Without you, we would have gone bankrupt, basically. Thank you. Oh, thank you. Is there any way I can I polish your car? Is there anything I can do for you?
Yes, I tried to purchase an item online, and my card was rejected. And I don't understand. Can you tell me?
No, your card is in great standing, Mr. Van Dam. You are, you support millions of people in our credit card company with your purchases. And did I thank you for being with us for over 20 years? Thank you. Oh, my God, thank you so much. You put my kids through college.
Okay, so what's the problem?
Well, when you make an online purchase, Mr. Van Dam, we automatically question it because the internet is such a horrible, horrible place.
Actually, what happened is I put in the wrong security code. When you go online, they ask you for that little security code on the card, like they need that. And I put in the wrong one. I was off by a digit. It's just one digit apparently makes a big difference. And it got rejected. And then I put the proper one in, and that got rejected too. And I thought, oh my God, my card has been rejected. Hey, where's my car? No, it was my card. So the lady says, well, when there's a rejection online, we don't approve payment. That's how we protect you. You don't understand how we protect you. Things could have fallen on your head. A tree could have slammed into your home. We protected that from happening. We are your angels of credit. Now, we've made the adjustment, Mr. Van Damme. You can go online now, and you can make your purchase. Well, I didn't make my purchase because I got scared. Yeah, I got scared. I don't want to give my credit card information, including my security code, to something on a computer system that apparently goes to the cloud. Now, I don't know which cloud it is. When I look up in the sky, I see a lot of big white clouds. One of them apparently is holding all my information. I don't know which one it is. I did not approve my information floating around in a cloud somewhere over New Jersey. I did not approve that. I'm an old school kind of guy. I buy things in stores. That's right. Do you remember this? Kids, you don't remember this. There was a time in our history when you would go physically, this is going to blow your mind, you would physically go to a store. They call them brick and mortar because that's what they were made of. And you would walk into this building that had merchandise in it of all types. Clothing, perfumes, electronic things, all kinds of items, shoes, purses, garden equipment, all in a store, in a building. And you would walk in, and here's millennials don't understand this. You could actually walk into the store and touch the things. You could see what they look like and touch them and see the quality of them and whether they fit comfortably in your hand, if they were made in a sturdy fashion or a cheap plastic fashion. You could read about it on the box. You could be there. You could touch the thing that you were just about to buy. It was an amazing experience, kids. You don't understand. You didn't have to read about it on a screen. You could actually touch the item. This is just incredible. You could go to a pay station called a cashier checkout lane, and you could actually bring the item in your hands, or they had a rolling cart. This cart had wheels on it, and you could put the stuff you wanted to bring home in this container cart thing with wheels on it and bring it up to this person at a register. They would tell you how much it cost. You would give them the money or a card to support that amount. They would give you a receipt, and you could take the item. This is the amazing part. You won't believe this. You could take the item home with you. You could take it home with you right there and then. You wouldn't have to wait till tomorrow or a week later for a truck to pull up in front of your house. You could bring it home right away and start using it immediately. I know. It's ridiculous, but it's true. That's what we used to be able to do in my day. It was phenomenal. The feeling of going somewhere, seeing something you like or needed, paying for it on the spot and leaving with it. What an amazing satisfaction that was. It was immediate gratification. You kids love immediate gratification, don't you? This was immediate. Wow. Very similar to when you go to a Burger King or a McDonald's. You go into the building, and if you want a hamburger, you pay them the money, and they give you the hamburger, and you get it home. Of course, it's the wrong thing you ordered, but that's besides the point. It's that kind of feeling. That's the immediate gratification. We could do that with items and products also in a thing called department stores. Now, there aren't many department stores left. So you can still go to some of them and experience that, kids. But that's what I grew up with. That immediate satisfaction of being able to buy something was pretty cool. You have no idea. You have no idea how cool that was. It's beautiful. Loved it. No idea how great that was.
Have you ever wondered how Ron Van Dam manages to sound so damn sexy podcast after podcast after podcast?
How?
It's simple. No pants. Ever. Pants are for suckers. You are listening to The Ron Van Dam Show. Pants-free podcasting at its finest.
When I was growing up, I was promised all kinds of stuff. And it wasn't by my parents, it was by society. I remember sitting in my backyard in my home. I was brought up in Teaneck, New Jersey. I'm not proud of it, I'm just telling you. Just saying. We had a backyard. It wasn't very big, what they call postage stamp size. It was bigger than postage stamp, actually. That's very small. But it wasn't a big backyard at all. There were a couple of trees and a couple of chairs. And I could see the clouds in the sky. And at that time, the clouds had no internet information in them. They were just puffy clouds of vapor. Now, of course, they're loaded with all kinds of technological data. Hey, here's a question for you. When it rains outside and your information is in the cloud, does your information get all wet? I think it probably would. I can't tell for sure, but I think it probably would get all wet. Anyway, so I would sit in the backyard, probably at about 6, 7 years old, and I would stare at the puffy clouds, and I would say to myself, oh my goodness, I'm just a young tot. I haven't even reached double digits yet. I've got a long life in front of me. And on television and in the books and in the movies, there were a lot of science fiction shows, and they all said, all of them said that by the time I was an adult, within like 20 years, there would be flying cars. Flying cars. And it seemed like that was possible because there were cars on the ground and technology was just taking off. America was like manufacturing everything. They were manufacturing everything. And flying cars were to be the future. There was a cartoon show on television called The Jetsons. Do you remember this? The main character was George Jetson, Jane, his wife, and he had a couple of kids by somebody else or something. And there was their dog Astro, and they lived in a space age kind of world, and there were flying cars. And everybody thought, I guess based on this cartoon and what scientists were saying, that very soon, within decades, we will have flying cars. Because that's how far technology is going to go. And I thought, whoa, this is pretty cool. Then there was a movie that came out in the 1960s. Were you born then? Maybe some of you weren't. But I think you can still appreciate what I'm going to tell you. So just shut up and listen to me. Stop arguing with me. Oh, God. Please stop arguing with me. In the 1960s, there was a film that came out called 2001, A Space Odyssey. It was a little less than 40 years away. And this motion picture by Stanley Kubrick was monumental in the sense that it made everybody here on this planet believe that, like in this film, 2001, we were going to be like amazingly in space and the technology was going to be incredible. By then, President Kennedy was already working on the moon. We were going to send people to the moon. We were going to land on the moon. And indeed, we did in the 60s. That's a long time ago. That's a long time ago. That was almost 60 years ago. It's a long time ago. We had people on the moon. We sent them up there. What'd they do when they got there? They just kind of like danced around and planted flags. I mean, what else are you going to do? There are no stores up there, no houses, you know, no parks. What else are you going to do but jump around on the sand? I mean, come on, seriously. plant a couple of flags, go home. I mean, Sarah, you know, at a point, like, well, let's get out of here. But we did that. We did it a couple of times. Then we realized, what's the point? It's okay. We can't live up here. So, like, what's the point? And then we just stopped doing it. So this movie, 2001, we were in this technology space age kind of mode, sending people to the moon, watching cartoon shows like The Jetsons with flying cars and living in these ultra-modern technological places. This was in the 60s. And this movie comes out, 2001, A Space Odyssey. And in this movie, we are traveling all throughout the solar system. We're landing on planets. There's interspace travel from planet to planet. And we create these environmental communities on other planets, and we're investigating them. You know, we've got space travel going on all over the place, you know, like an airport. And there are religious aspects to this film, but that's not what I'm talking about. In the film, we figure that by the year 2001, we're just going to be flying all over the place from planet to planet. So like, hey, what are you going to do this summer? I'm thinking of Mars. Mars should be nice. Nice place, Mars. Apparently great views of Earth. Nice hotels, good food, gambling, got the casinos going on. Day trips. We're thinking of going to Saturn. Should be nice. We got a condo on the first ring. That should be cool. Gonna stay up there a little bit, you know, because it is so cold. It's so cold in the Northeast in the winters. We thought we'd go someplace warm, like Saturn. We thought that would be kind of cool. Mercury. That is too hot. That is too hot. That's just for old people. Like in Florida, that's too hot, Mercury. I don't want to go there. That was like what they portrayed. In one scene in this movie, they had things really off. There is this guy who's traveling, and he's in some space station somewhere, and it looks like an airport. There's a floating airport in space, because that's what people do in 2001, apparently. And he goes to call his kids. And he walks into a phone booth kind of thing, and he puts the card into his credit card into the phone, and he's able to talk to his kids on what they called a video phone. Now, there was no such thing back in the 60s, but this was going to be the big technological thing in 2001, a video phone. That's the only thing that came true but never caught on. We could have had video phones, but we didn't because nobody really wanted it. We had to wait for the invention of computers to be able to see yourself with, you know, little cameras in your computer and your laptop. That's your video phone. That's Skype. That's your video phone. That came true only a lot later than they said. By 2001, there were no technological advances at all. There was nothing in 2001. Now, a lot of you were alive there, and you got to admit, there was nothing happening. We weren't skipping from planet to planet. The space station, I think we had one, but it wasn't like, you know, like three people on it. We don't have flying cars. Thank God, by the way. How do you handle that with insurance? Well, you didn't come to a full stop in midair. Well, I didn't see the sign. How do you handle that? But that's what we were promised. That's where we were supposed to go. And the only place we really went was the stupid computer stuff. That changed everything. That was the Industrial Revolution. That was the Technological Revolution. And that was about it. I mean, changed everything. We were promised things we never got. I was also promised when I was a young child by medical technologists that there'd be no more cancer. That people would live till 120 and healthy, and in a healthy state till 120. that the longevity age would be extended incredibly. I don't think it's been extended at all since I was a kid. At all. It might even be shorter in some areas. All these promises, all these security blankets when I was a kid, they were false promises. It's like Trump when he's running for president.
I am the great deal maker. I will make deals all over the place. We're going to get the Israelis and the Palestinians together. That'd be nice, right? We're going to get along with the Russians. That'd be nice, right? I can take care of all these political conflicts all over the world. I can take care of all of these things because I'm the deal maker. I'll be making deals. I'm going to take care of health care because I know how to deal with the two sides and find the middle common ground. And I'm going to start off running, and I'm going to make deals all over the place, and because I know how to deal with people. Well, the world's on the brink of conflict in just about every geographical theater. No deals have been made anywhere. In fact, they've gotten kind of worse. Healthcare, yeah, that's worked out. He's found the common ground there. And I say that sarcastically. That's not working. This guy has not closed one deal. In fact, he's alienated people to the point where you can't make a deal anymore. This is not Monty Hall that you elected into office, by the way. I'm just saying, there are a lot of promises that are made that are continually broken. So I'm just saying, as a kid, remembering the time that I sat in that backyard at 6, 7 years old, 5 years old, staring at the sky, looking at the bright future in my life, and now I find myself decades later looking back to that little kid sitting in the chair and realizing, you know what? Not so much. Not so much. Thanks for the psychological hopes and dreams, but not so much. Not so much. How you doing, huh? How you doing? Did I blow your mind? I'm sorry, I apologize. Wasn't my intent. Wasn't my intent to screw you up. Hey, you can listen to this show any time of day. It's not like, I missed it. Oh, God, it was 10 o'clock, I missed it. Oh, crap. You don't miss anything here with this kind of internet radio kind of stuff because it's always there. And you just click on it and you hear any show you want going back 800 episodes, kids. You want to binge listen? Listen to 800 episodes. That'll keep you up at night. You can find us on the Podbean Network. That's our podcast host. You can also find us on TuneIn Radio, iTunes, the Alexa app, all those kinds of things, and many other outlets all over these great continental United States. Thank you so much. Want to check out the Facebook page? There's really no point to it, but you can if you'd like. It's New England Broadcasting, The Ron Van Dam Show. New England Broadcasting, The Ron Van Dam Show. Pay a visit. There's nothing to do there. So do you own a car? Well, I don't know, you own it. I mean, do you pay for one? Are you mortgaging a car, so to speak? Are you making payments on a car?
It's you know, certain cars are more interesting to the thieves than other cars, and I thought that this would be kind of interesting. We're going to speak now to Roger Morth, who's the VP of National Insurance Crime Bureau. That sounds like really heavy title. Certain types of cars are stolen more than other types of cars. And are cars stolen at all anymore with those little fob things, you know, like the keyless thing? So let's find out about that. Hi, Roger. How are you? Roger Morth is Vice President, Chief Communications Officer, National Insurance Crime Bureau. And we're talking about, national insurance crime. What is that? What does that involve, that umbrella that we're talking about today?
Well, we investigate all kinds of insurance fraud and vehicle theft. And what we're really focusing on today is the nation's hot spots for vehicle theft, the places mm-hmm. where you're most likely to have your car stolen based on the theft statistics that came out and we just publicized today nationally. So the Albuquerque, New Mexico is number one on the list this year after being number two last year. Huh. And it's kind of surprising because usually you see a bunch of California cities up at our top 10 list.
Yeah.
This year, six of them are from California, Bakersfield, Modesto, Riverside. But we also got cities like Pueblo, Colorado, Anchorage, Alaska, mm-hmm. Billings, Montana in our top 10.
Wow.
So it's kind of an unusual year.
So it kind of almost doesn't matter. It just happens all over the place, pretty much.
Well, some cities are more prone to car theft than others. For instance, your area, Boston,
yep.
Metropolitan area, doesn't have a lot of car thefts.
Huh.
Surprisingly, you're number 275
wow.
out of 380 metropolitan areas in the country.
Hmm.
So you've actually gone down a lot over the last couple of years. So you have about 5,300 thefts in the greater Boston area,
mm-hmm.
which... you know, if you looked at it nationwide, it would be the 35th largest number of thefts for the nation. But when your population fits in, we base it on how many thefts there are per 100,000 people.
Mm.
You're fairly low on the list, which is a good sign.
Mm. How does someone steal a car these days when, A, there's like passive security systems in almost all of them, and you got these fob things where the car won't start unless you got this fob in your pants? I mean, that didn't sound right. How is it even possible?
Well, the technology has been the big driver for reducing thefts. I
yes.
mean, when cars didn't have that back in the late 1990s, you were seeing 1.6 million cars a year
wow.
stolen. Now
wow.
we're about 700,000 a year.
Okay.
So the anti-theft technology has been very effective, but you know, the hackers, the thieves are very good at what they do, and they're trying constantly to figure out a way to defeat these systems. So we recently talked about a mystery device, which is a device that targets cars that have a keyless fob and the remote
uh-huh.
push button start, and actually can intercept that signal.
Really?
The car thinks you're using a fob and opens it, unlocks it, and in many cases starts it, and you can drive off with it. So the thieves are trying ways to be one step ahead of the manufacturers, who are then trying one
uh-huh.
another time to play this cat and mouse game and stay ahead of the bad guys.
So it's not just breaking a window and hot wiring a car anymore. This is sophisticated crime.
It is. It's the criminal rings. Unfortunately, many times they're targeting cars. It's not an innocent, victimless crime. They're targeting cars to use in other crimes. We see a lot of cars here in the Chicago area that are mm-hmm. stolen from the suburbs. People leaving them unlocked, parked in their driveway, whatever. They're stolen, taken into the city, and then used to commit other crimes and then abandoned.
Yeah.
Or they're stripped for parts, or they're sold for newer cars are sold to go overseas. So there's a lot of reasons to steal a car, and the older cars are still very popular. The 1990s, in Massachusetts, the number one car last year was the Civic 2000 model, and the Accord 1997 model was number two because they still have, a lot of them don't have that technology
gotcha.
And built into them. There's
gotcha.
A lot of them on the road. They're still
yeah.
very popular, and people want them for parts mm. the black market. So they are still the most sought-after mm. cars, and the newer cars are very low numbers of thefts, actually.
Insurance.
So we are seeing
an
increase in thefts
yeah.
in the last couple of years, which is alarming because we've gone up about 2 or 3% a year ago, and this latest year it looks like we're going to be up about 6 or 7% nationally, which is not a good sign. So we want to make sure that people are aware that don't leave your keys in the car.
Right.
You know, take that fob and the keys with you. Lock it up. park it in a secure area if possible, and always be on the lookout for somebody that might be,
right,
you know, watching you or following you or near your car or something like that that doesn't belong there.
Well, Roger, if you leave your keys in the car, you're kind of asking for it, right? I mean, come on.
Well, I hate to say that, but it's not a great thing to do, not a wise decision. But about 1 out of 10 or so of the thefts that we see nationwide, people admit that they left the keys in the car.
Really?
And I think it's probably a lot higher than that because a lot of people don't want to make that.
I wouldn't.
So yeah, it's the easiest way for a car thief to steal a car. They don't have to do anything. They just have to wait and see you pull in that gas station or jump out to the convenience store or pull up in your driveway and see the cars out there unlocked. And crime of opportunity.
Wow. Insurance-wise and crime-wise, how many, what's the percentage of cars that are recovered as opposed to a total loss, it's gone, that's it?
Well, it varies widely. I mean, some places, 80, 90% of the cars are actually recovered. Now, what condition they're in when they're recovered,
right,
that could vary a lot. They could have been stripped. The wheels could be gone. Who knows? They could have bullet holes in them.
Right.
But so there can be a large recovery rate, but most of these are unfortunately not insured, because people keep a car over 4 or 5 years. Once it's paid off, they tend to drop the comprehensive coverage, which covers theft.
Yeah.
So maybe only 30% of the cars that are actually stolen are actually insured. So people need to be aware of that, and you weigh that risk. But the average car that's recovered stolen is about a $7,000 loss. The newer cars can be a $35,000, $45,000, $55,000 loss easily. And you may want to make sure you've got coverage for that kind of a loss. You can't afford that to come out of your pocket.
No, and even if you do have insurance, next time you pay your premium, you're hurting yourself too. So it's kind of like no way out of this thing.
It varies from company to company. There's always a competitive marketplace in insurance,
sure,
but you don't want to be filing a claim for a car theft if you don't have to. It's unnecessary.
Well, they know in your records what had happened in your previous insurance claim,
Absolutely. So that's
the way insurance works. What about the automatic car starters? You can't do it in your garage, so your car has to be outside when you're doing that. Can a thief just, like, pop into your car if your car is already started and you're not attending it, or does it take something else?
If you don't lock it, most of the cars require you to lock the car using the remote fob and then start it. So, but then also, the fob has to be in a certain range usually for it. Varies by manufacturer. It's a very convenient way of doing things, and it was designed for the convenience. But the thieves know this too, so they're using these third-party devices that emulate the fob, and they may follow you coming out of your workplace or out of your convenience store or whatever, copy that signal onto their device, and then wait until a good opportunity arises, go by and unlock your car and start it and drive off with it. So, there's always something out there. The bad guys are very good at what they do, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, when you pull up to a store in a mall or something like that, and all someone has to do is just sit there in a car and see you going in, and they know you're going to be in there for maybe 15 minutes, a half an hour, and they've got time to do the dirty deed as soon as you're out of the picture. I mean, I guess it's kind of, how do you prevent that kind of thing?
Well, there's really... we always say if a thief really wants to steal your car, there's probably not much you can do about it if they're very determined. But if you put a simple device like a club on the steering wheel, people laugh at that sometimes.
Ah.
Those things will deter a criminal because they don't want to take the time to have to bother with cutting that off, beating that. So there's a lot of anti-theft. Just to use the alarm system on your car.
Yeah.
You know, it's annoying, and they go off in parking lots all the time, and people tend to ignore them. Chances are if it goes off, the thief isn't going to stick around. So make it as difficult as possible. Don't make it an open invitation to say, hey, come take my car.
Yeah, okay. So those are some of the things we can do. Where do we get more information about some other ideas and tips?
Well, you can check out all our tips, all our information, our latest list of hotspots on www.nicb.org. It's available as of today.
Okay, that's nicb.org. Fascinating stuff, because we're all interested in it because we all have cars, and this affects all of us. So
it absolutely does. So it's not a pleasant experience to go through. You feel violated. You feel a big loss, and it can really impact your pocket if somebody walks away with that set of wheels of yours.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you so much for the information today, Roger Morris. Thank you.
Thank you, Ron.
Take care.
Nice man.
When you reach for a beer, what are you looking for? The finest malts, grains, and hops? An artisan ale that represents a modern take on traditional brewing techniques that master brewers have refined and treasured for years? A true beer drinking experience? Or, like most of us, are you just looking to get fucked up on the cheap? Well, if you're like the rest of us, congratulations, your beer is here. It's Falkenhalter. It's not a great beer. It's not even a good beer. It's a beer that's $4 a case, and it's strong enough to melt the chrome off a trailer hitch. So kiss your liver goodbye and say hello to Falkenhalter. It's beer.
The Falkenhalter people sponsor this program. Seriously. Anyway. All right. That's fine. That's good. Well, it's time to look at the product of the year. These are consumers like you and me. We're consumers, by the way. It's some of our favorite products of the year of 2017. Let's find out what those are. Sousa joins us now, and we're talking about the 2017 product of the year. How is this decided?
So we've actually partnered with Kantar TNS. It's a global consumer research company, and we've polled and asked 40,000 real people. So these are not executives, mm-hmm. not CEOs, not doctors in lab coats. Basically, this is the largest consumer-voted award for product innovation.
Wow. Okay. And has this been chosen already?
It has. We do. We have some winners. Product of the Year, in general, we were established 30 years ago. We're mm-hmm. in 37 different countries. Again, you can think of it as almost like a people's choice for products.
Okay.
And we have so many different categories like healthy snacks, home care, chocolate, which, you know, my favorite, and skincare. So I'm happy to take you through a few of these.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So with our foot care category, now this is a little bit more for the ladies, if you will. So our winner here was the Amopay Gel Active Insoles and Inserts. Now, walking around the streets, whether you're in New York City or anywhere else, you know, you have foot discomfort, it can just ruin your day. These here are really innovative because the inserts are customized for different types of shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually have these little spot cushions, and they're made out of this elastic clear gel. It looks like little circles, mm-hmm. and you can actually customize it to the pressure point in your feet. So these are great to just put in your bag, and then if you start to feel like a little bit of pain, you can put it on, and then you can go about your day, which is great.
That sounds good.
Yeah, that's a really great one. So for skincare, the winner in this category was the Kleenex Facial Cleansing and Exfoliating Cushion. This is really great for on the go. I know I tend to carry around my Clarisonic. It's really big and bulky,
mm-hmm.
but this is actually really interesting. It's these little water-activated cushions. So imagine that one side has a scrubby texture, the other side has a buffing. Both outside portions are white. On the middle, you see a little purple. That's where the cleanser is.
Hmm.
So you run it underwater, it foams up, and it helps to deep clean your skin. It has all these fruit extracts like papaya and pineapple. So again, really easy way to cleanse your skin at the end of the night.
Okay. Well, we're running a little short of time, but these have been chosen by the public as being their favorites. Is that right?
It is. So these have been vetted. So
yeah.
40,000 real people vetted. You see that distinctive red Product of the Year logo. You can trust it. You know that that it's not, you know, we're not going to these doctors, we're not going to these CEOs, and, you know, it's really great to be able to make smart decisions, right, every time you walk into a grocery store. It can be really overwhelming.
Right. And it's not the companies themselves trying to tout their product. These are actually used by people and say, they say, well, this is great stuff.
Exactly. So we're voting on that innovation and not just popularity,
if you will. I like that. Now, how can I get the full list of the winners?
Oh, you can head on over to productoftheyearusa.com.
That's easy enough. Even I can do that.
You can do that, yeah.
Believe me.
Love it.
If I can do it, anybody can. Hey, thank you so much for your time today, Anna D'Souza. And these are products that have been vetted. I like that stuff. Thank you so much today.
You got it.
Take care. Bye-bye. Lovely. Lovely. We're out of time for today. I'll be back again tomorrow with another program. Hope you join me then. Until then, I wish you peace.